Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Non-Traceable Assets, Dissipation, and Equitable Relief Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 20th, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Montanile v. Board of Trustees of the National Elevator Industry Health Benefit Plan. Petitioner Montanile was injured by a drunk driver, and his benefits plan paid more than $120,000 in medical expenses. He later sued the drunk driver, obtaining a $500,000 settlement. The benefits plan, governed by the Employees Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA, contained a subrogation clause requiring a participant to reimburse the plan for medical expenses if the participant later recovers money from a third party for his or her injuries. When respondent plan administrator fiduciary sought reimbursement from Montanile's litigation settlement, he refused, and the administrator sued in federal court seeking an equitable line on any settlement funds or property in Montanile's possession. Montanile argued that because he had by then spent almost all of the settlement, no identifiable fund existed against which to enforce the line. The district court rejected Montanile's argument, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit affirmed that judgment. By a vote of 8-1, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the 11th Circuit, holding that when a participant dissipates the whole settlement on non-traceable items, the fiduciary cannot bring a suit to attach the participant's general assets under ERISA 502A3, because the suit is not one for appropriate equitable relief. The court deemed it unclear whether Montanile had in fact dissipated all of his settlements in this manner, however, and thus remanded the case for further proceedings. Justice Thomas delivered the opinion of the court, joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Alito joined the majority opinion except for Part 3C. Justice Ginsburg filed the dissenting opinion. To discuss the case, we have Daniel R. Theis, who is an associate at Sidley Austin, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Theis.
This case has to do with ERISA, which is the federal statute governing employee benefit plans, like a 401k plan or a health and disability insurance plan that an employer might provide for its employees. Among other things, ERISA requires that the people administering the plan recover any overpayments that they might make to their employees for whatever reason. Interestingly, though, the statute limits the remedies that are available to a plan to allow it to do so. Specifically, under the statute, the plan can obtain only, quote, appropriate equitable relief, such as, for example, an injunction or restitution. The statute does not allow the plan administrators to obtain legal relief, like money damages. Montanile is a case that tests the definition of appropriate equitable relief. Now, if you can think back to your civil procedure classes, you may be thinking, wasn't equity abolished in the federal courts? And you would be correct. It was abolished in 1938 with the adoption of the rules of civil procedure. However, surprisingly, this is an area that is very persistent in our law. To give just one example, the Seventh Amendment of the U.S. Constitution guarantees the right of trial by jury, quote, in suits at common law, not in suits at equity. So even if you have no interest in ERISA or you've never dealt with that area directly, Montanile is an important case because it deals with this question of what equity is. And that question shows up in a surprising number of places in our jurisprudence. So what are the facts of the case that present this question? Robert Montanile was an employee of the National Elevator Industry Health Benefit Plan, and he was injured in a car crash by a drunk driver. The plan paid his medical expenses, as it was required to do. Sometime later, Montanile recovered $500,000 from the drunk driver who was responsible for his injury, and the plan tried to obtain reimbursement out of those funds of the medical expenses that it has paid, obeying ERISA's command that it do so. Now, the plan and Montanile had a disagreement over whether or not the plan documents allowed the plan to obtain that reimbursement. And they spent several months trying to negotiate a settlement of that dispute. But that effort failed. And as a parting shot, Montanile's attorney sent a note to the plan saying that he was going to disperse the funds that Montanile had recovered from the drunk driver to Montanile to allow him to spend them however he wanted, unless he heard back from the plan that it wanted him to hold on to those funds. The plan didn't object, however, and the attorney went ahead and sent the funds to Montanile, and he spent them on his daily living expenses, food, rent, etc., so that they were completely dissipated and he couldn't get them back. Now, this fact pattern sets up the question that was presented to the Supreme Court. And that question is, after the particular funds that Montanile had recovered are gone, can the plan recover those funds from other money that Montanile has? Can they recover from his general assets? Is that, as the statute says, quote, appropriate equitable relief? So the plan sued to try to recover the funds, and this is the question that was presented. Both of the lower courts, including the 11th Circuit, ruled in favor of the plan and said that it could recover. And then Montanile appealed up to the Supreme Court, which accepted cert. Now, the Supreme Court has a framework already set up from earlier cases for deciding this question, and it goes back to the 1993 decision, Mertens versus Hewitt Associates. And that case held that appropriate equitable relief is, quote, those categories of relief that were typically available in equity. And the court has even applied that standard in several subsequent cases. First, in Great West versus Knutson in 2002, the court had decided whether recovery against a plan participant's general assets is possible when the employee never possessed the particular funds that the plan was trying to recover. And the answer in that case was no, recovery was not possible. General relief from the participant's general assets is not equitable relief. And the second case was called Sereboff versus Mid-Atlantic Medical Services in 2006. And in that case, the court had addressed whether the plan could recover when the employee possessed the funds, the particular funds that the plan wanted, and still had possession of them. And the answer in that case was yes, that's just a typical equitable remedy of restitution. But the court had never addressed whether the plan could recover when the employee once had the funds, once had them in his possession, but then later spent them. And that's the question that's presented in Montanile. Now, the parties presented fundamentally different ways of approaching this question. Montanile tried to make the question entirely about the historical practice of in equity courts. He wants to focus on the technical details. He pulls out the treatises and the old case law, and he tries to answer the question, how would courts of equity actually have addressed this question? Would they have provided this kind of relief? By contrast, the plan wants to see equity more as a set of flexible principles. To the plan, equity is not set in stone. The most important of those principles that the plan points to is that in equity, a right should not be without a remedy. And the plan advocates that the court should adopt this general rule and then decide if the remedy that is sought in any particular case is consistent with the policy goals that are articulated in ERISA. So by and large, we have a situation where Montanile is presenting a view of the inquiry that's entirely historical, and the plan wants to focus more on policy arguments. We shouldn't overstate this difference. Of course, Montanile tries to rebut the plan's arguments on policy, and the plan also raises some historical arguments. But by and large, there's this pretty stark conceptual difference between the parties, history versus policy. And the court comes down in an 8-1 decision by Justice Thomas, resoundingly on Montanile's side, the side of history. The court basically adopts his reasoning about how to approach this inquiry, and the court also pulls out all of the dusty old treatises and equity case law having to do with traceability rules. And based on that old case law, the court determines that the plan cannot recover from Montanile in this case. The most important quote from the court's decision is that those treatises make clear that a plaintiff could ordinarily enforce an equitable lien only against specifically identified funds that remain in the defendant's possession, or against traceable items that the defendant purchased with the funds, such as identifiable property like a car. So because Montanile had spent all of the funds on daily living expenses that couldn't be traced to a particular asset, since the funds were completely dissipated, the court held that the plan could not recover. The court also made short work of the plan's policy-based arguments, dismissing them as irrelevant. The court said, quote, vague notions of a statute's basic purpose are inadequate to overcome the words of its text regarding the specific issue under consideration. So what are the takeaways from the court's decision? First, if you are the administrator of an ERISA plan, It's important to pay attention to when your employees recover funds that you might have a right to have reimbursed to you. You have to pay attention and sue before the participants dissipate or spend those particular funds. If you don't, you might not be able to recover. Now, you might be surprised at how often this type of situation comes up. It occurs not only in situations like Montanile's, where the participant is injured, has his medical expenses reimbursed, and then recovers from a third-party source. It can also happen if you have a disabled employee whose expenses you pay, but who then later recovers from Social Security, for example. Or sometimes plans simply make overpayments by mistake to 401k or pension fund participants. So this type of situation can occur frequently, and plans have to be paying attention or else they might forfeit their recovery. But secondly, and I think in an implication with a broader interest, if you're a law student, the lesson here is that you definitely want to take a course in equity. The court here in Montanile resoundingly affirms that the equity law distinction is here to stay in our jurisprudence. As the court says, we have to go back to decide these questions and look at what actually happened historically with equity courts. And if that's the case, then continuing to study the way equity courts operated is going to be important. In the past, the question of the extent to which the court should apply the historical equity practice to questions that are relevant today was close. In the Great West case that I mentioned, there was a vigorous dissent by Justice Ginsburg, and it was a 5-4 decision. Now we have an 8-1 decision. Justice Ginsburg dissented again, but really in a rather minimal dissent of only a paragraph, simply referencing her earlier arguments in Great West. The overall lesson, it seems, is that the court has largely resolved this question, and that when the question of what relief was available in equity comes up again, the court's now going to require that we look back into the past and see what equity courts actually did. So to keep an eye on going forward, the big question after Montanile is, I think, to what extent will the court's approach in Montanile inform its jurisprudence in other places in the law implicating the law-equity divide? And I already mentioned the Seventh Amendment jury trial right, which, again, is only for suits of common law. That's one other area where we might see this approach come up. There's also the Administrative Procedure Act, which waives sovereign immunity for, quote, relief other than money damages. And there's the Judiciary Act of 1789, which confers on federal courts jurisdiction over, quote, all suits in equity. And finally, there's the statute dealing with the jurisdiction of the Court of Federal Claims, which says that it can only adjudicate suits for money damages and not equitable remedies. So in all of these areas, I think we'll see other questions come up to the Supreme Court, and it will be interesting to watch whether or not the court adopts the same approach that it has endorsed now in Montanile of looking back at the historical equity practice to determine exactly what these statutes mean.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.